you guys. Welcome back to Flickers of Fear. Now, as should be apparent from some of my other videos, other movies that I've covered on this series, I'm a pretty big fan of kind of slow burn psychological horror. So when I started hearing that this particular movie, which actually ended up, I think it premiered at Sundance like last January of 2022 and kind of had a little bit of buzz surrounding it, when I found out that it actually just dropped on Shudder a little while back, I, you know, kind of brewed myself a cup of peppermint tea and I said, I'm going to sit down and watch Watcher. Sorry about that. I just kind of feel like everybody, like you almost have to do it. You almost have to, it's the law. You have to make that joke. Okay, so Watcher is the feature-length debut film of writer-director Chloe Okuno. Now, she's probably best known, you know, her previous credit that is best known was probably directing the Storm Drain segment from VHS 94, like the anthology film from 2021. So on this one, though, she's working from a screenplay by Zach Ford, who also produced it. It seems like he wrote the original script and then she kind of like, you know, rewrote it to suit her own tastes, I guess, or her own vision. And the vision that she seems to be wanting to get across is very steeped in... I mean, the whole thing is just like very foreboding. And I think like the whole thing, too, is... homaging particularly Alfred Hitchcock, you know, in very particularly Rear Window. But I also got a real Roman Polanski vibe, particularly The Tenant, but there are some kind of like, there's some stuff like Repulsion and there's kind of like slightly Rosemary's Baby in here. And I'm not saying that it's like a ripoff necessarily, but the influences are like pretty readily apparent, and not there's anything wrong with that. Holy crap. I mean, if you're going to be influenced by something, those are some really good movies to be influenced by, and that's all I'm saying. So Watcher, it doesn't do anything particularly new plot-wise. It's pretty much just a very simple stalker thriller type of movie. But the execution of it, I think, really elevates it. I mean, it's just a very elegant, it's a very classic type of movie. Like, I don't necessarily want to say throwback, but it is just like a very classic thriller type movie. Like I said, very much in the vein of Hitchcock. And honestly, I thought it was pretty damn great. I got really into it. I think the acting performances in this are really good. And again, another thing that elevates it, I think they're very subtle. And I think that really helps with the narrative a lot. The cinematography, I can't remember the cinematographer's name. I apologize for that, but I think he's Dutch. And he just, the way he shoots everything, it's just like he gives everything this real unsettling vibe, but he's not real like overt or showy about it. And I think it worked really well. Also, I have to say too, I really like the score for this. They used a lot of Johann Sebastian Bach, particularly like the Well-Tempered Clavier or whatever. And that was in there a lot. And I thought that was really cool. I thought that like fitted in a lot with kind of the whole vibe of the movie. Now, one caveat, though, when I say this movie is a slow burn, I mean it. It's pretty slow paced. I didn't mind, and actually, it didn't seem slow to me at all. Like, I was just riveted the whole time. Because really, I mean, from my perspective, at least, every interaction in this, every event, every conversation, no matter how innocuous it seemed on the surface, was just kind of laden with real ominous overtones. But one criticism that I saw, like most people seem to really like this movie, it has like 88% like positive or something like that. But from some of the people that commented on Shudder and commented elsewhere, the main criticism I saw mostly, other than, oh, we've seen it's just like a thriller like the other ones, but mostly people were like, oh, it's like too slow, it's too boring. Boring, and they couldn't sit through it. Now, I really don't agree. I did not find it boring in the slightest, but I'm just giving you a heads up right here if you're not real into kind of like slow burn and more like psychological horror, because things happen, but there's not like any really big like kind of gore violence or anything like that until the end. Like, you know what I mean? So if that's going to bother you, then maybe give it a pass, but I really, really liked it a lot. So in the lead, we have horror darling Micah Monroe, obviously best known for It Follows. That was kind of her breakout role from 2014. She's been in a couple things since then, but I think that's probably what most horror fans know her from. And I think that, like, it seems the horror community were very excited about this movie, particularly because she was going to be in it, because I think this is the first horror movie that she's done since then. So she's in this. She plays a character named Julia. And she's a young former actress who is married to this kind of big shot marketing executive named Francis. Now, this guy is played by Carl Glusman, and I was like, holy crap, that Glusman, I'm not really sure how to pronounce his last name. I apologize, again, because I hate getting people's name wrong, but you know what I mean. And I was like, man, I've seen that dude before. He's been in a lot of stuff. I think he was in some Gaspar Noé movies. But I think I recognize him from The Neon Demon, because I saw that not too long ago. So Francis, the husband, he's recently received a promotion, and he and Julia end up moving to Bucharest, Romania, from New York City. So Francis's mom was Romanian, and he's fluent in the language, but Julia doesn't speak a word of it. It's kind of implied. They don't really go a lot into Julia's past or her history. Like, a lot of it's just very, like I said, very subdued, very subtle. Like, a lot of it is kind of implication, or you're kind of left to fill in your own blanks. I kind of got the impression that Julia was kind of like at a point where she was very adrift in her life. Like, she says at one point that she's like, they're like, oh, you used to be an actor. And she's like, yeah, I realized it wasn't for me. But she really kind of seems unsure of what exactly she's going to do now. You know, and like moving to Bucharest to support her husband, like his big job and everything like that, it sort of seemed like, well, that's the thing to do because I don't really have anything else in particular going on and I can't really, you know, it's not really what I wanted, but you know, this might as well do this as do anything else. That's kind of like, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but that's kind of like the impression of her character that I got. So the couple rents this really nice apartment, and Francis proceeds to, you know, work very long hours because, like I said, they gave him this big promotion and he's, I guess, like trying to justify the company's faith in him. And so to that end, too, not only does he work long hours during the day, but like at night, he's always kind of schmoozing with clients, like trying to get new stuff, you know, like taking them to cocktail parties and dinner and blah, blah, blah. You know how that kind of thing goes. So he basically is leaving Julia alone much of the time. Now, she is trying to learn Romanian. She's got, like, the language app on her phone, and we see her, like, trying to learn it. But there's still, like, a really huge, like, language barrier. Now, when Francis is around, he can translate for her, but when he's not around, she struggles with, like, really, really simple tasks. You know what I mean? It's like even just going out for coffee or going to a museum or something like that just becomes fraught with difficulties because, you know, it's just there's so much potential for misunderstanding and it's just she's really having a hard time. So not surprisingly, Julia begins to feel very isolated. And I think right here, this was a good decision. Chloe Acuna, the director, she decided not to translate or close caption any of the Romanian conversations, of which there are many. And that puts us, unless we speak Romanian, which I do not, but it puts us in the same boat as Julia. Kind of feeling detached and excluded and sort of like hovering around the fringes of other people's lives and never being able to be fully involved because everybody's having all of these conversations and stuff and you have no idea what they're saying. Now, not long into their stay in Bucharest, Julia notices the silhouette of a dude at the window of an apartment like across the way, like across the street. Now, he seems to be sitting there every night staring into her window, though she can't really tell exactly what he's looking at because he's always in shadow. So it's like, is he looking in the window or is he just kind of sitting there? Like, you can't really tell. It's very, very creepy. But his sort of pervasive presence, it seems like every evening, like she kind of opens the curtains and there he is. He's just kind of sitting there like the shadow. And she's like, what the fuck? It just kind of like puts her on edge, as it would, you know what I mean? And these emotions that she feels about that get exacerbated when a woman in the nearby apartment building, like I don't think it's the same one that's across the street, but it's one like a little bit down the street. She gets beheaded, like pretty much almost beheaded. She's murdered. Now, through a conversation with Francis's workmates who come over for dinner one evening, it's revealed that there's actually like a serial killer known as the Spider who has been on the loose for quite a while and has already killed several other women. There's also a little bit of a hint that maybe Francis, the husband, like knew about this kind of stuff, like knew it was going on, but didn't tell her. And she didn't know because she didn't speak Romanian. So she's like watching the news and being like, well, what are they saying? And he seems like reluctant to tell her. So he's almost kind of like infantilizing her a little bit, I want to say. There is kind of like, and I think she actually accuses him of that very thing, like at some point in the movie. So he's like trying to keep her, maybe kind of trying to protect her a little bit, but it's a little bit like paternalistic, you know what I mean? It's a little bit like condescending. So, yeah, so there's a serial killer running around and he didn't want her to know. And, like, he's apparently, like, getting closer because it just happened, like, a few buildings away. And they actually see, they don't see the body or anything like that, but they see when they're out walking one night, they see, like, the ambulance and then, like, they see the guy in there that found the body and, like, there's all this stuff. And, you know, so then they find out later, like, what happened. So, as I said, you know, her husband's working all the time. She doesn't really, she's kind of, like, at loose ends. She doesn't really know what to do. She doesn't know anybody. So she kind of just starts wandering a little bit aimlessly, like, around the city. She's trying to kind of familiarize herself with the place and, like, trying to practice her Romanian a little bit. Like I said, going to coffee shops and stuff. But while she's doing that, she starts getting the very distinct feeling that she's being followed. Now, at first, she isn't sure if maybe she's just imagining it. I mean, she's been under a lot of stress. She just moved to another country and, you know, there's culture shock. She doesn't speak the language. She's feeling very lonely. And, you know, their whole thing about the serial killer. I mean, yeah, that's a concern, too. So she's kind of like, well, maybe I'm just being paranoid. So this one particular day, she's kind of like feeling like there's somebody kind of behind her, but so she ducks into like a movie theater and she's going to like hang out in there for a little while. And then she starts kind of turning like surreptitiously, like checking out the other patrons or whatever. But then this dude comes and like sits like directly behind her. Which fucking, god damn it, I fucking hate that. Like, even though, like, the theater is almost empty, there's only maybe, like, four or five other people in there. Don't you fucking hate that? Like, when you're at the movies and it's, like, the whole theater's empty and then some motherfucker just, like, has to sit in the same row as you or, like, just in front of you or right behind. I'm just like, fuck off. Like, you feel like whole theater, just get the fuck away from me. I hate when people do that. So I really kind of like felt it when, you know, this creepy dude like sits and you can't really see him because it's kind of like, he's kind of blurry and then he kind of like goes behind her and she's just like, oh shit, I don't like that. And I don't blame her one bit. So she actually kind of panics and is like, fuck this. And she runs out. Now she goes into a grocery store next. And she's pretty certain that the same dude that was behind her, she didn't see his face, like she just saw his shoes. So she's pretty sure that the same guy like followed her to the grocery store and is kind of like peering at her like around the aisles and stuff like while she's trying to shop and shit. So she like flips out. She kind of like flees through the back of the store, but she also starts to become convinced too that not only is this creep like obviously following her around for some reason, but she's now pretty sure that this is the same guy who sits in the window and watches her from his apartment. Even though, like I said, she can't really see that guy, but still she's like pretty certain. She has a gut feeling that it's the same dude. Now her husband, Francis, who is almost never at home, is initially kind of supportive, or as supportive as you probably could be in this situation. He goes with her to the grocery store and asks if he can see the CCTV footage so he can see what she's so upset about, like what the guy looks like what exactly he was doing that was so sketchy. So while they're watching it, she's trying to explain, it's like, look, watch what he's doing. But to him, it doesn't really seem like he's doing anything overtly sinister, even though, because he wasn't there and he didn't like see the whole, like, you know, context or how she felt or anything like that. So he's kind of like looking at her, and you can tell like by the look in his face that he's really starting to doubt her, that he's kind of starting to think, hey, maybe she's making something out of nothing because she's under so much stress. Now, eventually she does actually end up meeting a friend who's this really nice girl, this really nice woman who lives next door named Irina, who is, you know, she's her neighbor, and she lives alone. She had a boyfriend, but she got rid of him and shit like that. And she's also like a dancer in a club, like a stripper or whatever. So she befriends her. So one evening, she's kind of over there at Irina's apartment. They're kind of like, you know, drinking some wine and having some girl time. And so she gets a little bit tipsy and she comes home to her own apartment and she sees the dude watching from the window again. Now she's kind of, like I said, a little bit inebriated and has like a little bit of that Dutch courage going on or whatever it is they call it. And she's also kind of been bolstered a little bit by Irina's sort of like, yeah, fuck him kind of attitude, like toward her ex-boyfriend in particular. And she's a lot more confident and a lot more assertive. And I think so Julia is just kind of like, you know, kind of bolstered up by that, like I said. So she decides, okay, I'm gonna see for sure if this dude is actually like looking at me or if he's just looking at something else and I'm just being crazy. So she like raises her hand like she's waving at him, right? So then like nothing happens at first and she's just like, oh, so that's me, I was just being silly and paranoid and stuff like that. But then like After a little bit, the dude raises his hand, like, waving back. So she flips out because she knows for sure now that this dude is just sitting there looking at her, which, like I said, that's not fucking illegal, but it is really, really fucking creepy. And yeah, I would be wigging out as well. So she flips out and she convinces Francis to call the police. So from that point forward, it's pretty much a classic gaslighting scenario. Julia is pretty adamant that this guy has nefarious intentions. He's like creepy as fuck. But Francis and the police and everybody else that she tells about it, other than Arena, who seems to be like more understanding, obviously, because she's a stripper and she's a woman and she's been through the same shit too. So she's just kind of like, yeah, if you think something's sketchy, probably something sketchy. But Francis and the cops just think she's blowing everything out of proportion. You know, she's just being hysterical. And they, you know, they point out the man hasn't actually done anything to you. You know, and it could just be that he lives in the neighborhood and he just happened to be in the grocery store. He just happened to be in the movie theater. You know, you're just imagining that he's like stalking you and stuff like that. He hasn't done anything like that he can be charged for or that looks all that suspicious to them. And, you know, and they point out, you know, Julie's been under a lot of stress lately. Like I said, she's, you know, so she's maybe not in the best frame of mind. Also, she's in a different culture. Maybe she's misreading some signals. Maybe she just doesn't understand, like, you know, the way the guy is reacting. Maybe that's normal in this culture and she doesn't get it because she's American or something like that. So Julia, who is very frustrated, as you would be, by this kind of, like, by the dudes, like, blowing her off, she's like, well, I'm gonna follow the dude myself just to make sure. She wants to make sure that, am I correct that this dude that was following me around in the grocery store in the movie theater, is this the same guy that sits in the window and, like, watches me all the time? Because she feels like it's the same guy, but she wants to be absolutely sure that it is. So she kind of, like, starts to, I don't know if I'd say she goes on her own investigation, but she does kind of, like, casually, like, start to sort of follow him around. And this, unfortunately, ends up making her look maybe, like, to other people, even more delusional, because it's starting to seem like she's the one that's stalking him, and then he's just, like, this hapless victim who's, I'm just doing normal shit, and now this, like, crazy lady thinks that I'm a stalker, and, like, she's stalking me now, and blah, blah, blah. So there's kind of, like, a little bit of a flip going on. And I don't really want to spoil it any farther than that, because I really did like this movie, and I think it had, like, some really good twists and turns. But, you know, as I said, the story isn't all that original. It's just a very classic, like, thriller stalker type thing. But there's definitely something to be said for taking a premise like this just back to basics and just making a really solid kind of tension-filled thriller that isn't really ostentatious or, you know, anything or showy or anything like that, but is really good at keeping you invested and keeping you guessing where it's going next, while kind of staying really admirably restrained and very grounded in reality. I mean, the direction, like, Chloe Okuno's direction of this is very assured, and I like that they align your perspective, like, the viewer's perspective with Julia's, like, right away. So all the way through, you're really sympathizing with her. You're feeling her anguish, her self-doubt, and also kind of her building resentment at not being believed or not having her concerns taken seriously. You know, it's just kind of like, I mean, like most women, you know, like 99% of women, I feel like, I've been in the same position as Julia many times. You're pretty sure, like, a strange dude is up to something sketchy and possibly potentially dangerous, but then, like, when you try to tell someone else about it, it sounds kind of lame, and it's like, you know, oh, maybe it was nothing to worry about, maybe I'm just overreacting, I'm overthinking things, blah, blah, blah. You just don't trust your instincts. And that's something that a lot of women deal with. It's really, really not a good feeling. And this movie really nailed what that's like. And it also has, like, the added alienation factor of also being in an unfamiliar country where you don't know anyone and you don't speak the language. So it's hard to get help and people are having conversations about you maybe and you don't really, like, know what they're talking about. I mean, maybe. So the thing about it, maybe, because I was reading one review that said maybe this movie hits different. Like, if you're a woman, and probably it does. I'm not saying that a man can't enjoy it, obviously, because I just think it's a good movie across the board. But I think maybe if you're a woman, you would get more out of it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just, like, talking out my ass. I'm not entirely sure. But a lot of what she went through, like, the, you know, the struggles that she had, like, to get believed and all that kind of stuff, like, really resonated with me. And actually, one thing, and this is kind of, like, a smaller thing, but it's sort of, like, a microcosm of, like, the bigger thing. It happens in the movie a couple of times, and it almost made me feel like crying because it was just kind of like, it was just, I could feel the frustration, and I've been in, like, similar situations myself. There was a couple of scenes where Francis and his colleagues, like, they're at work functions or, like, you know, some of his colleagues, like, come over for dinner or whatever, and they sort of, like, insist on speaking Romanian in front of her most of the time, even though they can all speak English, and it almost seems as though they're deliberately trying to isolate her further. And maybe they're not doing it, like, to be mean, but the fact that they're so thoughtless about it, and it's like, you know, that she's just sitting there excluded, looking at him going, gee, sure do wish that I knew what you motherfuckers were saying, you know what I mean? It just seemed really rude, and, you know, because I hate that. I hate when, like, people who, and you know that they can speak English. All of them can speak English, like, perfect, and the fact that they're sitting there talking in Romanian and then, like, laughing and stuff, and she's just sitting there going, wow, wish somebody would clue me in. So to me, that seemed, like, really rude, and it was, like, really, really frustrating. And then later on in the movie, like, they do it at first, and it seems kind of innocuous. Well, not necessarily innocuous, because they're talking about the serial killer, and it's almost kind of like they don't want her to know about it. So they're trying to kind of keep it from her. Like I said, almost trying to protect her, like she's a child. And but later on, like, she's at this work function, like a cocktail party, and they're all talking, and I'm not going to even say what it is, because it made me so mad. But, like, but her husband basically makes a really, really, really tasteless joke about the serial killer and about her fears and stuff like that to his work colleagues, and they all laugh. But, and that, like, it made me so, so angry. But like, by that point, she had learned enough Romanian. Like, he didn't know that she was, like, learning it. So he thought, oh, we can talk about all this stuff, and she doesn't know what we're saying, which to me, like I said, seemed fucking horrible. And I was just kind of like, oh my God, what a fucking asshole. Even though, like, he started out, like, pretty much okay, but, like, he just got more and more dickish, like, as time went on, and that, to me, was, like, a super, super dick move, and I was just kind of like, oh my God, I was just, like, fucking want to shoot that dude in the face if he did that. That's awful. But, like, the joke that he made, it was, like, it was fucked up. So I think what upset me the most about that is the betrayal of it. I mean, she came over here for him, and it's, like, here's this person, he's supposed to be, like, supporting you and have your back and stuff like that. And like I said, she kind of gave up. I mean, maybe she didn't have anything going on, but she did kind of, like, move to another fucking country where she didn't know anybody and speak the language just for his job. And the fact that he would just, like, make fun of her, like, for, like, a cheap laugh, was just, like, really shitty. But yeah, he just seems like he's trying to sideline her and her anxieties, like, all the time, because he just doesn't want to deal with it. And yeah, I think that really kind of, like, that made the movie, like, a lot more, like, scary to me, I guess. Like, that kind of stuff is very scary to me. So, in short, too late, probably. But if you have Shudder, this might be on other streaming services as well, but I watched it on Shudder. It's been on there for a month or two, I think, right now. And if you're just in the mood for a very classic, no-frills, Hitchcock-style thriller, Watcher is pretty dependably entertaining. It's very controlled. It's very restrained. And as I said, it doesn't really have a lot of violence or shocks until the end, but it's actually, like, a really, really great buildup of dread, like, throughout the whole movie. And it's not super long. Like, it's, like I said, it's slowly paced, but I think it's a good buildup. It's only about 90 minutes. And I think, like, Micah Monroe really sells this kind of, like, heightening unease of the narrative, like, as it's going on. And she's, I like her performance because it's very, very low key. Like, because you can tell, and maybe this is, again, my interpretation, but you can tell that she's really trying not to get hysterical or emotional or anything like that, because she wants to be believed. So she's trying to make herself seem as stoic and rational as possible, but you can tell that she's just, like, simmering underneath because she's, like, freaking out. But she keeps everything very, very low key, and I think that was, like, a really good choice. I really, really like her in this. I think she's, like, fantastic. And honestly, I mean, this is really her movie. You know what I mean? She's in pretty much every scene. Like, yeah, there are other characters, but she's kind of the main focus of the whole thing, and I think she did, like, a really great job. So honestly, I think this is is one of the better thrillers I've seen in a long while. And I have to say, too, that I'm looking forward to Chloe Okuno's next project, which I think was initially going to be on Netflix, and I don't think Netflix is going to do it, but I think somebody else has bought it now. I think it's going to be based on the true case of that serial killer, Rodney Alcala, the dating game killer. I think she's making a movie based on that, or at least based on the woman that chose him on the dating game. So I was just kind of like, oh, I'm there for that. That sounds awesome. But yeah, if you've seen it, let me know what you thought about it in the comments. And that will do it for this Flickers of Fear. I will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.